Engage.
Change.
This is 702.
This is 702.
For the curious.
We are joined by Carla Marx. Of course, she's got more than better words to explain this chilling, chilling recollection. Carla, thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Hi, Asanga, it's Yana.
Yana, sorry about that. I don't know where my mind got lost. My apologies. Just dusting up some cobwebs. So I was just talking about this story itself. It's very difficult to imagine something as chilling as this happening in South Africa and Krugersdorp of all places.
Yeah, I think you usually would think that crimes of this degree or even, you know, this weird, bizarre crimes will happen far away there where you never come, you never set foot. And suddenly it's here. I mean, I stay in Randburg. It's right next to me. It's it's people, regular people that I see in Spar or Hulwes or the teacher of someone's daughter or whatever. So it's very, very regular people.
So let's just paint a picture. What kind of town is Krugersdorp? For me, you just see it. Maybe you might be passing by in the freeway and those kind of things. I might be tapping into some people who haven't heard of this story. Give us a backdrop of what Krugersdorp looks like before we get into Cecilia Steyn and her seven friends.
Yeah, I draw some similarities with Bloemfontein, where I grew up. I don't want to say it's Afrikaans community, but you get the more, you know, not a very, very Joburg vibe there. It's more platteland, if you know what I mean.
Would you say conservative as well? Would you say a conservative community?
Sorry, your line is breaking up.
Sorry about that. Would you say that it's a conservative community?
I would say so, yes. It's more conservative, it's around the mines there. You get the soul of the earth people there.
So I can't imagine over 2 years, 11 murders happening. And how did you come about the Krugersdorp cult killings? And I can't imagine, for me, when I first encountered Satanism, I was horrified in high school. I was terrified. I had anxiety and nightmares about it. I just didn't understand the whole idea of Satanism itself as a conservative Christian raised person. So I can't imagine how were you affected by it?
Yeah, interestingly enough, I studied theology in Bloemfontein, so it's actually very interesting that a former theological student will now write a book about cult killings. But I started to attend the case as a reporter. I work for Netwerk 24, and at that stage in 2018, back in 2018, I was still reporting on several cases, and this was only one of them. But then I saw that indictment and I realized something is up. This is somewhat different from what I have seen in court. So in May 2018, I started to attend the case and it gripped me. I think especially because I have a theological background, it was extremely interesting for me to see the role of religion in all of this. And I think that is also, I'm also a confessed Christian, but that is the interesting thing of the story. Religion in this book is an instrument to manipulate. It was not the Christianity I believe in, or even the Satanism we read about or whatever. Yeah. It's not the true religion that was being practiced. This was all a make-believe Christianity or a make-believe Satanism. Cecilia would create or adapt. Adapt the known narrative. Religion to serve her own purposes. So she will create her own religion to get people to do what she wants. And she will tell them it's in the name of that religion.
When you talk about cults, they usually are led by people who are charismatic, who also provide a lot of mysticism and hope for people who feel to an extent there's a threat. What about Cecilia would prompt these individuals? And I mean, one of them these are intelligent, ordinary people. We're talking about a teacher, a financial broker, and a teenager who managed to get six distinctions in matric and be accepted to medical school. What about Cecilia convinced all of these ordinary people to commit these heinous crimes?
You know, I think if you meet Cecilia in the street and you don't know anything about her, you don't know about this court case or anything, I think you will actually like her a lot. She's a very nice person. She's an inviting person. And I think what made her, or what made her a magnet for people, is people could confide in her and she related with people. Oy. She had many made up issues. It was all make believe in her mind. But if you will tell her you have a drinking problem, she will say, "Oh, don't worry. You know, I drink and I'm alcoholist," or whatever, just to get you to think that she is understanding what you are saying. And yeah, by that is the way she drew people in. And the moment she has that, she knows which buttons to push. Sure. Then she has you in the grip, in her grip, and she will just continue to use that against you and just remind you, you know, I'm the only one that understands. You need to stick with me. So yeah.
Mm. So they managed to evade the police for quite a while, and these are inexperienced criminals. How do they manage to evade capture for so long?
Masanga, just to check, you did read the book. Now I'm just going to refer to something now.
No, I don't want to give away too much. Yeah. I don't want to give away. It's a brilliant retelling.
I just want to say, you remember when you read it, I referred to, you know, X and Y, and now that's where I want to what I want to get to. I can't even name some of the police officers in the first few chapters because they are still being investigated, because that is a huge part. Because a main reason why they got away with it for so long.
Oh my goodness.
There are police officers that actually screwed up the investigation. So if you read that X and Y, you'll know exactly what I referred to.
Okay.
And that is a big reason. I mean, this is a police success, but this is also, you know, it started off with a huge police bugger up.
Oh. So I like your research, and you know, Yana, we take it for granted that we have people like you who are telling these dynamic stories, and who are committing time to actually doing investigative journalism beyond the I guess Twitter headlines and the secondary reporting itself. It's so interesting to hear this recollection itself about the Krugersdorp murders. If you have any questions, if you'd like to comment on what we're chatting us about, we're talking to Yana Marks in our weird and wonderful section. It's not so wonderful, but it indeed is interesting. So after planning and planning some more, eventually you spent more than 7 months to draft this manuscript. Can you tell me psychologically the toll of this, looking at the information? I'm sure you have access to some of the most grisly retellings of what happened to these people. And I think for me, the scary thing is knowing that these are ordinary people, in inverted commas.
That was definitely one of the things that got to me from time to time. But when I started to write this book, I was still reporting on the case as well. So during the day, I'll sit in court, and at night, I will dig deeper. And for that 7 months where I was sitting and just drafting and drafting and drafting, I had to work through, obviously, the court records, but also police dockets and horrifying, horrifying photos. I mean, I could lie awake for 3 nights after going through one of the murder dockets. So yeah, psychologically, there were times that it was really, really tough. Times that I couldn't sleep, and times that I would walk in spot, for example, and just think, oh my word, these people are so, you know, regular, so many regular people in this case. Aren't I passing one now? You know, is this maybe a murderer? Is this maybe a serial killer? I got that sense of a bit of paranoia for a while. It didn't last long. I'm very, very glad for that. But yeah, so psychologically it was quite tough.
Can I ask how you got through it, Yana? Did you get any assistance from your family, friends, maybe a partner or professional help? I'm sure I've heard that, for example, actors do need a bit of, for example, you could look at the role that the Joker, that was played by, I just forgot the actor now, but just in terms of your own process and the psychological effects, did you get any assistance at all from anyone?
Yes, I did have a debrief session once or twice. it was after the court case. We have the services at Media 24 where I work, so they provide those services. But I also had someone on standby if I needed her. And I did call her once or twice just to debrief, just to talk through it. And I think the one thing is you need to talk, but you can't talk to your partner the whole time or to your friends the whole time about, no one wants Fair to enough. Hear about murder the whole
I can
time.
Imagine. can
because
imagine.
You have an independent person. But I also had my friends and my then boyfriend, he's now my husband. And he would just look at me and say, okay, you know what? I can see this. He's getting to you. This is tiring. Take a break or whatever. And even while I was covering the court case at the time, I was sitting for about 60 days in court. My line manager at the time also said, okay, you know what? You can take this day or this day off just to take a break, just take a breather before you go on.
So, Jana, one of my favorite stories, a headline that I read, and is always, we're always going to compare ourselves to international standards because we aspire to be the best. But one of my favorite stories is in Canada, where they found a killer by extracting their blood from a mosquito. So this blew my mind. I was like, where do you even begin? We watch the CSIs, we watch everything. We watch the true crimes. We find people being busted because of a hair, for goodness sakes. And it makes me wonder, how big is the gap with our forensic investigation and the international standards? Is it intentional? Can we ever get to that type of level of forensic investigation? Because I know one thing, it costs money. It also takes capacity and resources. In your experience of this case and the dockets you went through, you did unearth as well some unsavory aspects of our own police enforcement. How big is the gap? And to a certain extent, I believe it's intentional.
Do you know what? This case was solved by a police officer that was part of a task team at the time. We had what we call a war room. We don't have that anymore. So the war room will be an office where officers from different disciplines will come together and talk about cases. And when a case is discussed, intelligence will say, okay, this is our case. And maybe then the facial recognition specialist can say, okay, but I can help you with CCTV footage or whatever. So I think this was a very, very good thing, especially in Gauteng with our high crime rate, to have that war room. I don't really know why we don't have it anymore. With regard to the forensic evidence and that, this case even was solved with the help of people that did facial recognition and all of that. But I know we have a backlog. We have a backlog in DNA. We have a backlog in many of these tests. So I don't think it's that we don't have it. I just think there's a backlog and there might be a certain inexperience, but I don't want to generalize it at all.
No, thank you so much for that, because we make up all the assumptions. And even from my own experience, you tend to think of it negatively. In terms of the book itself, where can our listeners get a hold of it and what can they expect?
The book is, and I'm very grateful for that, is sold at the mainstream bookstores, bargain books, exclusive books, and so on. You can buy it on Amazon and Take a Lot. I think the hard copy is available on Take a Lot now. It wasn't a week ago. I think what the book is trying to do is trying to give the whole story, because this case, it lasted over several months, years, and people were very intrigued. But I think as court cases, As the case will get postponed and postponed again, there will be months in between. And, you lose some of the story. So the book wants to give you the whole story and also fill in some of the gaps. The book stretches over a period of about 13 years. So we really start off to say, how did these people meet? What led to these things? What is the build up? Who was part of it? Who got out in time? So it just, it fills a few gaps and it just gives the whole story. If you want to know what happened to Krugersdorp killings or the cult killings, this is the whole story from A to Z.
Nicholas found his mum and dad lying face down in a pool of blood on the living room carpet. They had opened their gate and house for their murderers because they had an appointment. Can you tell us more about these appointments? How did they happen exactly?
I think that's also one of the bizarre things of this story. You know, these killers didn't go out or didn't wander in obscure places and find people also wandering there. These were professional people, the killers as well as the victims. And the victims, I mean, they just attended professional appointments. The killers will call them, make an appointment. The victim goodness. Will come and see them. I mean, it will usually be someone like a realtor, the one lady, or a financial advisor. That's someone that is actually mobile that can go to your house. And that person will be killed upon this professional appointment. So it's actually quite horrifying. I mean, you can imagine how this shook this sort of conservative community of Krugersdorp. You're just showing up for an appointment, and next thing you know, someone is stabbing you to death.
How do you get someone to that? I still can't. I think I've asked this question in different ways. How do you get from being a banker, for example, and just a normal person to actually plunging a knife or scissors or whatever instrument into another person's body? Surely, I understand the grooming itself, but it just baffles me. How do these normal people end up becoming murderers?
Yeah, I would actually enjoy to hear. I wish they were psychologically evaluated in court. They weren't. So I would actually love to hear what someone says. I'd actually had a few consultations with them, not only for the probation report. But I think the role of religion here is very important. I remember, these people were very religious. And if someone tells you, someone can convince you that whatever you're doing is in God's name or for the better of the world, for God, and you will get rewarded for this. And that, I mean, that doesn't justify anyone to commit a murder, but that's a big thing that drove them to actually commit these murders, especially in the beginning. I know everyone got to the senses at some point, but in the start, from the beginning, that was actually what drove them to go and kill people. They actually thought they were doing good.
And how did you discover the cult, Jana?
Well, by the court case. As I've said, it was one of the court cases I was assigned to cover. And the next thing I knew, it was this case. And I was gripped. I couldn't stay away for 2 years. It was so extremely interesting, horrifying, but interesting.
And I can't imagine how the families were affected by all of this and normalcy in terms of the Krugersdorp community after this case itself. The book you mentioned for our listeners is available, and it took us over a 2-year journey with regards to the Krugersdorp murders, which made headlines in many media platforms and is still being reported on today. And the case itself continues, as you've mentioned. Have you had any international response towards the investigation?
Not yet. The English book has been released about a week or two ago, so I think it might pick up. I think it's something that international market will actually be very interested in. You know, one of the police officers, she's quite a high-ranking officer in the police, she told me that this case was one or two or three that they studied. So they study, so the FBI make them study certain cases to improve in their ranks. And she said this was compared to one or two other cases in the world that's quite similar.
Jana, I don't want this thing, like something like this, ever happening in our country again. And for me, what you mentioned is a bit scary. I was encouraged by your stance, especially by standing up for our police officers, our investigators, those who do the job properly. And you mentioned a war room. I liked the efficiency. I liked the fact that there are people like this beyond the assumptions that we make, beyond the barrage of negativity that we push. I like to think that there are hardworking, dedicated people. You've seen them behind the scenes and you've worked with them. Tell us more about the war room itself that assisted in cracking the case. What did it consist of and why don't we have them anymore?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. I wish I could answer that. But I know specifically for this case, even a state prosecutor was assigned to sit into that meetings. I mean, can you imagine how effective a case will be if you have the prosecutor telling what I need? You have to do this and this and this for your investigation to be complete for me to have a successful prosecution. So there were several disciplines sitting in this war room, and the head of the war room at that stage was also the head of intelligence in Gauteng. So you have this group of people. Someone specializes in the facial recognition. Someone draws the sketches of faces. Someone do the surveillance. And everyone gets together and brings their expertise to the table. So maybe you are not the person that works on the surveillance every day, but you now have someone in the surveillance able to assist you with your case. I think this was what led to, this was the beginning of the success of this case. And then eventually we had the investigative officer that connected all of these cases. I mean, there were several different open investigations at this stage.
Sure.
And then one person was asked to connect all of them, and that was Captain Ben Boyson from the Hawks. So yeah, I really applaud the officers that that started with this, and then obviously Captain Boyson that tied all the knots, tied everything together, and said these are the 11 murders, and these are the killers.
Jana, would you do a story like this again?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think I'm just trying to imagine. You know, I think a case like this comes once in a lifetime. You know, interestingly enough, the state prosecutor, he has retired now. He was the deputy DPP of Johannesburg. He's retired now. The head of the war room at the time, he's retired now. Everyone said this is such a such a big milestone. We might as well finish our careers here and there.
There's a crude term in journalism and broadcast called it, if it bleeds, it reads. And it talks to the negative elements of that aspect. I love the fact that you're such a rounded person. You've got theology going as well, which inspire. How did it affect your telling of the story?
Yeah, that was actually an interesting thing. And I can connect that with the investigation as well. But at the beginning, I thought, oh my goodness, you know, what is the part of religion here? Are we talking, I mean, I'm a true believer. Are we talking about true belief here? And it threw me a bit because I struggled to make the connection. And it was after a talk with the state prosecutor at the time. He, also a believer, just said he realized from the start, you have to distinguish here. This is not a religious case. Religion is not a crime, and you can't prosecute with religion hanging over a case. We're working with facts. We're working with people that died. And the moment I got that mindset, it became a lot easier. And I then actually could realize that the whole religion part of the book is Cecilia's make believe.
I'd like
That's
to
actually
hear-
one thing the judge.
Yes, please, Karen. No, I'm just thinking I'd like to hear from some of the listeners, because the discussion about religion and whether or not it makes people do or act better. Because if you just say you can be religious, but it doesn't mean you're a good person. A religious society, does a religious society necessarily mean that there's going to be good, there's going to be goodwill amongst people?
Definitely not. I think we're still working with people, if you're religious or not. They always say, Christians, I'm a Christian, but Christians are still people. And even if you have the dominie of the church, it's still a person. And people can be evil.
Yeah.
And things happen to people. So that's definitely not something that can something that can exonerate you.
Sure. If you're
from bad things happening or from you doing bad things.
If you're listening in, we are talking with Jana Marks, and we're at the tail end of our discussion discussing the Krugersdorp cult killings. I've listened to some very open-minded discussions about Satanism, even atheism to a certain extent. And I just want to talk to some people who would like to maybe distinguish between religion and even just being a good person. Does being a good person mean you need to be a specific religion itself? Taking your calls on this very interesting topic, 011-883-0702, SMS is on 31702 if you are in Johannesburg. If you're in Cape Town and you'd like to join in, 021-446-0567, also taking your SMS is on 31567. So, Jana, it's just for me, the discussion about religion will always spark some discussions. And I think during COVID, it's a time when people are saying, where is God? Where is your God? And certain I've seen rituals where babies are slain and those kind of things. Can we distinguish between perhaps, I liked how you said it's not a religious case. Many religions started off as cults as well until they were accepted into society as formalized religions. I just want to talk about that aspect of the case not being about religion.
Yeah, I think the one thing, if I can refer to the first four murders, with officers X and Y, the pseudonyms, that they investigated, it was investigated as satanic murders. But nothing of the killing showed that this was a ritualistic ritualistic killing.
There it is.
It was nothing like that. You know, you get, I mean, I spoke to officers that did investigate killings like that, and they said you will see a pentagram, you will see a lot of candles. So that's one of the questions I would actually like to ask that cop, okay. X and Y. Why did you think this was satanic killings? If there was nothing except candles there in the corner of the room, maybe for the load shedding, to indicate such. So, there are many people that say, and I think I'm treading now on...
It's cool. So, Jana, there are a few callers... Worry about it. There are a few callers who are interested. Would you mind taking a few listeners' questions?
Yes.
Let's go to Jeff in Cape Town. Jeff, thank you for calling in. Welcome.
Hi, Jana, is that the author's name?
Yes.
Sorry, that's a fascinating topic. And what's the name of the book?
The Krugersdorp Cult Killings.
Krugersdorp Cult Killings. No, thanks. But my question is, you mentioned that you thought initially that the religious part might be problematic in a way, but then you said it soon became apparent it was just a make-believe part of a group of psychopaths, and that then actually made a lot more sense. I suppose what you're saying is that it could have been anything. It could have been religion, or it could have been a gardening club, or it could have been I'm just trying to think of an astrology club or something. It's just your point is that religion was just a cover of sorts. Mm. That's my question.
Jana?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jana. So Jeff is asking if... you mentioned the fact that religion itself was a tool. So I guess
Christianity
Jeff...
that was used.
Yeah, so I guess Jeff's question was it could have been anything. It could have been a book club. She was just using a tool to manipulate these people.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. In her case, it wasn't the religion that we know or read about in books or even believe in.
Mm. Is that correct, Jeff?
Okay, yeah. No, thanks, because in a sense, people could use political beliefs as well. And what I find fascinating is that it plays to murderous impulses that are probably universal.
Interesting.
And that's the evil that you talk about that is manifest.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, so it's a, that sounds great. Great book.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. So, Jana, I don't know if you used the term psychopath, but I heard Jeff saying that. And for me, I think it's these people who looked apparently ordinary. But when you use a term like psychopath, you'd run away from a psychopath. But it's not easy to see from someone just by looking at them that they are actually psychopaths. Right, we just seem to having some... issues there with the connection with Jana, but it's a conversation that what is it about killers that fascinates us? Is it the fact that it could be anyone at all? It could be your neighbor. And for this specific story, the book, it's called The Krugersdorp Cult Killings: Inside Cecilia Steyn's Reign of Terror. We have Jana back. Sorry about that, Jana. Welcome back. Oi, the gremlins are just messing up with us. We'll try and get it back. France in Alberton, we're going to take your call just now. France, please hold on. We're just sorting out some gremlins in the system. We are talking about the Krugersdorp cult killings. And it's always easy to talk about satanistic killings because it's the dark aspect of it. But we are on the same station, and I'd like to think that we are open-minded. And those discussions and conversations have happened where we've had satanistic groups that have talked about being non-violent and they actually don't kill people. So I'd like to hear maybe some of those discussions. We have Jana back. Jana, welcome back. Sorry about those gremlins.
No, thanks for having me again.
So the last question from our listener, we just trailed off a bit. It was about, they used the term psychopath. So I didn't hear you using the term psychopath at all. Would you describe the individuals who were part of these killings as psychopaths?
Yeah, it's difficult for me to say. I mean, they weren't evaluated by a psychologist. There was no such evidence in court. And I mean, the psychopath is a very generalized term. There can be many, let's say, illnesses that we just brand psychopath. So it's very difficult for me to say I'm not a psychopath.
Fair enough.
No, I haven't consulted with them. But, I mean, there's definitely
a link.
If you see people testify and gloating about murder, sure, that is not normal. So I don't really know what you would call it.
Oy.
But it's definitely not normal.
Okay, let's talk to France in Alberton. France, thank you so much for holding. Welcome to the show.
Hey, hello, Wasala. How are you?
I'm well, France. I'm well. Welcome.
Yeah, man. You're busy with a very deep and serious thing, you know. but then I wonder what is the reason why your guest is not mentioning that name of the church. But anyway, do you still remember there was a church in Eastern Cape, that site?
Yeah.
Do you still remember? And those guys, during the arrest, they were armed to their teeth. Do you still remember that church, that site?
Yes, it's almost a lot of the a lot of cults have an army to protect them with that kind of thing.
It reminds me of that. That church. I don't remember the name, but then there was pure religion. Mm. You know, it was not...
I know which one you're talking about. I'm just trying to find the name of it, yeah?
Yeah, I still remember. They were, when they were arrested, they even killed some police. Some of the police there were killed by them, the pastors of that church. Yeah. So
do you have a question for Jana? Because she wrote a whole book about the Krugersdorp killings related. But the main thing that they mentioned was that religion wasn't, and it wasn't satanistic killings. Do you have a question for Jana specifically?
No, I just want to, I'm just asking if you can just mention the name of that.
Okay.
Either a church of a group of something of that type, because... And then if she still remember that the not so like the same group, that side, by the Eastern Cape. Yeah.
All right. So I think France is talking about another recollection of satanistic killings, but there's a huge distinction. There are similarities. Yana, would you care to articulate maybe some of the question he has between the parallels? There was a similar sort of situation where, but it was directly related to Satanism in the Eastern Cape. Can you tell us a bit more about the parallels and the differences between that and the Krugersdorp killings, cult killings?
Yeah, so Francis asking about the church. Now, Cecilia, they didn't belong to a certain church. Their ministry group was their own, was the church. So they called themselves Electus per Deus, and that's Latin for chosen by God. So they had their own independent church, and I think that church in the Eastern Cape is referring to, isn't that the Angels Ministry?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
I think
it might be that. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's also very, very, there's a lot of similarities between the two cults. Crimes are committed because of beliefs. But I think, I don't know what the motive was for the Angel Ministry, for Angel Ministry, but for Cecilia, it was for personal gain. So in her case, she was like a boss with a few employees, and she ordered them to go kill other people on her behalf. And it was, every time it was for her own gain, either for her own emotional satisfaction or to get money or whatever. So I think that might be the difference. I think if I recall the case in the Eastern Cape now correctly, the police officers were slain and so on. I think that was more an attack on police and authority. I think that was more what it was, not necessarily for personal gain or so.
All right, Franz. Thank you for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
All the best. That's France in Alberton. We're talking about the chilling cult killings, Krugersdorp cult killings. How did they happen? How did they manifest? It happened in South Africa. And it talks about Cecilia Steyn's Reign of Terror, Bloody Murders. The book itself, subject is controversial and has people talking. And Yana Marks is on the line with us. If you have the last few comments, it's been a gripping, gripping recollection of what really happened. And we've tried to not give away too much, but it's a true crime account that led to one of the most sensational murder cases in the country's history through interviews with those in the inner circle, evidence given in court and police files covering a period of 4 years. Yana, you are such a brave person, and it's a thrill to talk to someone like you. We think about investigative journalism, but you really epitomize what that is. Thank you once again for joining us. We have Lebu in Benoni. Lebu, good morning. Oh, evening. Why do you keep saying good morning?
Okay, good evening, Wasanga, and good evening to your guests.
Welcome.
Hi, Lebu.
Sure, thank you. Cheers. Okay, so I have two things to declare right off the bat, right? One is that I'm a Christian, and secondly is that I'm a psychiatrist, right? Just to address the idea of it being satanistic, murder is regarded as a satanistic act by Christians, right? Now, it may not be... So a murder may happen not as part of a satanistic ritual, right? But it is a deed which is of satanistic influence, right? In the Bible, John 10:10, the Bible says the devil comes to steal, to kill, and to destroy, right? So anytime when we see an unwarranted or unprovoked killing, right? Christians look at it as a satanistic act. Okay? The second part that I wanted to get to is that of psychopathy. Right? I heard Wasanga ask if these people are psychopaths. Yes, and it may be difficult to determine, right? But indeed, the gruesome acts of murder are often typical of psychopaths. But it doesn't mean that the people who carried out the act are necessarily psychopaths, right? So many people may be guilty of psychopathic acts, right? So someone in a heat of rage might slash somebody's tires and write lipstick on their car or whatever, right? And that is a psychopathic act. But if it's not a consistent character trait that the individual has, then they are not a psychopath, right? Although they have committed an act which is typical of psychopathy, right? I don't know if you get
it. No, we appreciate that distinction, Lebo. Do you have a response, Yana?
No, I think I agree with him. I remember, I recall some of my psychology studies back in university. But yeah, I think what he says, I agree with the trend, definitely the trend. You can't say if someone does something at one time or two, three times, you then classify them with a certain disorder. Definitely not.
All right. Lebo, thank you so much for your call. Do you have any other questions? And
That was the only comment I wanted to make. Thank you.
All the best. Drive safely,
thank you,
please.
Sir.
That's Lebo in Benoni. We are with Yana Marks. I'm out of superlatives for her and the wonderful work that she's done. Yana, did you at all feel unsafe while you were doing the investigations? There's certain times where I'm a huge supporter of whistleblowers, but we do not invest in whistleblowing activities. We want justice, but I feel to a certain extent we do not invest in that. And we talk about the National Prosecuting Authority. You talked about the experts that were in the war room itself. What does it take and what should we be aware of to make sure that we have all of these lovely, these necessities that can provide at the end of the day, the cracks that, what do we call, the breakthroughs that we want to see in investigations?
I think, I wish we can recreate the war room, because I imagine the perfect setup where everyone contributes from their field of expertise. The fact that we don't have it can maybe have an effect on the crime or even a successful investigations. I think it definitely can. I mean, if it wasn't for a war room and for really, really dedicated officers, this case would have started to see her and her and the gang would still be out there. I also think if you look at the Goedendorp case, the people are so, you know, it's so regular. Everything about this is so, there's nothing weird about the people involved if you would see them in wars or whatever. I think it just makes you more aware of what's going on around you. The days of, you know, these characters hanging around in the street far away from you, that day has passed.
Sure.
I mean, I think there are more cases or more groups like Cecilia's, but we just don't know about it yet. I think...
No, I'm just thinking about the fact that we think most of the time criminals are waiting underneath bridges and wearing balaclavas and just waiting with long nails and all those kind of things, whereas they could be just passing by you at Woolies.
Exactly. And it's not these obscure figures anymore that you see on the days of the Malkus and that from many moons ago that you see, oh my word, you know, you can see that picture, imagine that person killing a lot of people. If you look at the crime rate today, I even had a chat with security guard at a complex tonight. We had an armed robbery a week or what ago. He said that people came right past security. They were dressed as cleaners.
There was
nothing weird, nothing to suspect that, okay, you have to stay away from these people. Okay, this doesn't look right.
Yana, I want to finish off with an SMS from one of our Cape Talk listeners. Nathan says, the Krugersdorp murders are simply symptomatic of the moral collapse of post-1990 South Africa. Would you feel that observation is correct?
Sure, I think that's actually very, very good. I have to think about that really very, very deep. We have a moral collapse. I think it's becoming worse and worse and worse. I think we're getting so used to crime, so used to the moral decline. So these things you watch the news and you think, oh, another one, another murder, another attack, another gender violence case. And I think that's what worries me. We shouldn't get used to this ever.
Yana, once again, thank you for the work that you do and the incredible work you've done. If you are listening in, you have just joined in the last of minutes of our conversation with Yana Marks, the author of The Krugersdorp Cult Killing. It's a book. You can get it. It's the Krugersdorp Cult Killings Inside Cecilia Steyn's Reign of Terror. Thank you, Yana. All the best. And hopefully we can speak to you soon.
Thanks, Aswanga.